October 5th, 2017.
Oh yeah, it's that time again. Time to talk about Halloween, the occult, and everything in between. It is night one, Occultoberfest 2017, 7th annual Occultoberfest here on Reflections in the Dark, which has been a beacon into the darkness since May 2010. Broadcasting live, Firefall Studio, Spreaker.com, only place you can hear us live. You can hear us archived, not dead, we're still alive, but we're recorded here. Blog Talk Radio and iTunes. Wednesday night we do. I can't believe I heard you laugh. Compose. Wednesday night, 7 p.m., The Porch Bible Study. We talk about some of the similar things. Right now we're really in some deep, deep teachings that you should be there. Still working on the deep darkness. You want to help, you want to support that, go to thedeepdarkness.com. Follow us on Facebook, Twitter, and Instagram. And on that note, I will bring in the social media guru himself, Joseph Jones.
Well, the social media guru himself. Thank you. It is good to be here, and I'd like to welcome our listening audience. And you know, I am still shocked that we are in Occultoberfest 7. I mean, 7 years. That's just, it's just unbelievable. It's just unbelievable that we've had so much information over the years that no show has ever been boring. We've always talked about different things. We've covered a lot of topics. And when we started the whole Occultoberfest, I mean, we wanted to have guests and we wanted to do things like that. And it worked for a little while. But I have to say, the way we've been doing it now and you know, everything that's been happening in the world, I have to tell you, I look forward to this part of the year because of the fact that we do have Occultoberfest. And it also tells us that we're winding down to another year. And we know when that happens, as we close each year out, we know of the newer things that are on the horizon for next year. Some, you know, for the positive, some not for that. But it's always exciting for SRT. So it's really, really good to be here.
Yeah, I can't believe. Actually, this is what you call a soft opening. Here's what a soft opening is. A soft opening is you have to open, but you're not ready. And everybody knows you're getting ready to do it. So you open anyway. So that's what this is, because I didn't realize it was October 1st till I got up this morning. I thought it was next week. I thought the first night of Occultoberfest was next week. And luckily, we had some stuff to talk about that tied in and created the new intro. And so here we are. But you're right. We're into the final 3 months of the year.
And speaking of not knowing the date, I'm thinking the same thing. I'm thinking that next Sunday will be the first weekend of Occultoberfest. And I thought tomorrow or Tuesday was actually October 1st. So that's really just that and I just found that revelation out 2 minutes before the show, everybody out there. So that's the funny part. So
we're still looping. You're looping.
I am looping, but you're right. It is good to be here. And you're right. It's a soft opening. And sometimes the softer routes in the beginning turn out to eventually be some of the best ones. So I look forward to this month, and I'm more than positive that we will definitely educate and have a lot of fun over the next 4 weeks.
If any of our listeners have a topic you'd like us to cover, we have covered a lot of things in 7 years. But if you have something you'd like us to cover, maybe somebody you'd want us to look into having on, we're very careful about who we bring on, so you know that about us. But we'll take all that into consideration. Go to Firefall talkradio.com or supernaturalresponse.net. But you know, the thing about Halloween, Halloween is based on fantasy and fear and fun. And Hollywood seems to be at the forefront of that. And the horror remakes and reboots over this year and next year are pretty interesting in that you would think, I mean, I know Hollywood is a little stale and they like to reboot things, but you have Jeepers Creepers 3 coming out. You have another Halloween with a bringing back Jamie Lee Curtis. You have Cult of Chucky, which is the seventh installment of the demonically possessed doll. Leatherface, which is the Texas Chainsaw Massacre character. Friday the 13th, and then they are rebooting the miniseries, the Stephen King miniseries, The Stand. But the big story for 2017 has been a horror movie called It. A group of bullied teens band together when a shape-shifting demon taking the appearance of a clown starts hunting kids. Now, forewarned, it's rated R for violence, horror, bloody images, and language. It was released on September 8th, and I had intended to go, but something about a hurricane kind of got in the way, and then time slipped away. So I will go check it out. So we will be talking from a research perspective, not an experiential one.
That is correct, and we can definitely reserve that. I did. I was able to see it a couple of days ago.
Okay.
So we can definitely talk about it more next week when you've seen it. So
you and I
will have more.
Fill in, you know, I'll give some of the facts, but you can fill in what you saw. That's fine. I know the story. I read the book, 1986, that book came out. I think it was like over 1,000 pages. I saw the TV miniseries, and it just set a record. It broke a 44-year record. It broke The Exorcist's highest-grossing horror film of all time record. It reached the $500 million mark. The problem that record offers is tickets in the time of The Exorcist were much cheaper, and if they adjusted the gross of The Exorcist to today's movie tickets, it'd be like $1 billion. But as it stands, Stephen King, It is the highest grossing horror film of all time based on a $35 million budget.
Right. And I'm going to agree with you and stick by that as well. I do believe that The Exorcist, for me, you know, and maybe next week or later on in the show, we'll talk about it. But The Exorcist was definitely the scariest movie for me. And the price was the same, like you were saying, I definitely believe it would have hit the billion mark. No doubt in that. As far as, you know, the thing with Stephen King, I call it two sides to Stephen King. There's Stephen King, the writer, that can tell a great story, can be very descriptive and put you right in a situation. Carrie, Salem's Lot, Richard, you know that. That's around all of our time eras. I mean, he's definitely a gifted storyteller in that way. The thing with Stephen King is what he'll tell you is that he'll take somebody's fears and, of course, take that and turn it into a novel. So where, you know, we may look at Pet Sematary or It or The Shining for how we visually see it, he always, in his mind, or how he'll say it, is getting over people's fears or people having fears of clowns. So it almost looks harmless the way he does it because he takes that concept and he runs with it. But then though, if you see what's happening in underneath it all, and you can see what's happening visually as well as the words saturating your mind and creating those images, it's going a lot deeper than just going through somebody's fears. And seeing it's definitely a lot different than the original movie that was released. I believe it was like 90, 91, somewhere around there. It was definitely a lot different than it is now. It was much scarier as far as the clown and, you know, seeing the clown and some of the things. There was definitely more of a demonic energy, an air to it that went way beyond the 1990 version. The music, the the sound, the surround sound, it almost seemed like they had the sound extra loud. It, you know, like when you can go to, sometimes you can go to certain movies, it's not loud enough, but when you can feel that sound in stereo, that's what it was like. So it was like all around you, from the front, the sides, the back. You, when something happened, you heard it, you seen it, you felt it. And I can definitely tell you that comparing the two between It and The Exorcist, I still think The Exorcist was a lot scarier as far as, you know, what that topic was about and you know, for the time frame that it came out. But if you were to take where it stands right now, probably one of the scariest movies that has come out in a long time. You watch certain movies that you'll get a chuckle out of the crowd when something funny happens or something looks a little, you know, cheesy. You'll always get that crowd laughing a little bit. In this movie, nobody was laughing. Only when it was justifiable to laugh. Maybe one of the dialogues between the kids and things like that where it would call for you to laugh. But the imagery and the horror and the air that they were trying to capture has been captured with this movie.
I'll be looking forward to just seeing it. The miniseries, you got to realize, we realized TV could only go so far. Tim Curry's portrayal of Pennywise is, to me, iconic because there was a childishness to it that would make you believe that the kids would initially be attracted to him. Right. I've only seen the trailers and the clips. This one seems to me he's demonic from the word go. But that could just be from, I've only seen those clips. But when you were describing Stephen King's writings, and back in the late 70s and early 80s, once Carrie came out and began to read his stuff, he, first of all, he overwrites 1,000 pages. I mean, that's what every critic of, I mean, he overwrites. He gives you information you really don't need, but he really gets into it. But then there's an element of his writings and his characters that make me kind of tilt my head and go, dude, there's something wrong with you. This is beyond being creative. I get it. You take natural things, Cujo, a dog with rabies, or The Stand about a virus, and on all these natural everyday things, and you make them frightening. But then every now and then, he just gets a little bizarre. And when I look at his pictures and I look in his eyes, my take is he's not alone in there. That's just my personal opinion. But, I mean, he's not as bad as Clive Barker and some of those. But that's the problem with it that has bothered me, is that I always got the sense, and I don't know if he's ever admitted this or not, it was based upon John Wayne Gacy, the man who dressed up as the clown, to capture and kill young boys.
Uh-huh.
Now, I don't know if that's what he says he based it on. Bozo the Clown, Clarabelle, and another clown, and then just made them frightening. But he hits the whole aspect of your childhood memories, the trauma of childhood being bullied, how that follows you into adulthood, which is what the sequel, which has already been fast-tracked, which already has a release date of 2019.
Right.
Will cover. It'll jump forward 27 years and they'll talk about these kids as adults. Something about killing little kids has always bothered me beyond, because I know it's the enemy, I know it's satanic, I know it's what the enemy really does. But let's talk about the story in case any of our listeners don't know, and then you can tell me about the movie part of it. In the book, there's a group of kids that are bullied. They're a part of something called the Losers Club. Oh. And they live in a town called Derry, and there's something in the sewer system that comes back every 27 years, and it's back, and it's taking kids, and these losers, I think there's seven of them, band together, six boys and one girl. they band together to fight Pennywise, the demon, and defeat him. And that's essentially the core of the story. Would that be correct?
Yeah, that's definitely the core of the story. And you will see that. They will introduce the different characters, how they all kind of bonded together and became friends and been bullied. And you can see each one having their own. Like in the movie, there was these three teenagers that were responsible for a lot of the bullying to the Losers Club and each individuals. And you kind of they kind of touch ground a little bit about that. So, yeah, that part they nailed down, setting that whole thing through the sewer system. You can see how it all happened in the beginning and those things and where they were setting it up. So that part is definitely on track.
If we're giving away spoilers, folks, I'm sorry, but we got to discuss. I don't know how the ending of this movie ends, but the book ends in a very perverse way. And that's something you and I talked about the other day, where you made the statement, this movie's made $500 million and nobody's paying attention to what it's really about. Here's how the book ends. They defeat Pennywise, but then they get lost in the sewer system. And the girl, whose name is Beverly, I think they're, what are they, 11 or 12 years old, 13? How old are they?
Yeah. I mean, the way they have it, I don't think they really specify it. Like, they look like they're in high school. So I'd probably say between 13, 14 years in high school. But I think in the book, they're younger.
They're younger. Yeah, if they're high school, they're 13. But in the book, they were younger. But anyway, they get lost. And for some bizarre reason, which is never explained, the girl Beverly figures out the only way, they're trapped in a hallucination. The only way to bring them back from this hallucination is to have sex with all the other boys, which are her age. And I have actually here a quote from the book. "I have an idea," Beverly said quietly. In the dark, Bill heard a sound. Bill's one of the other main characters. He could not immediately place a whispery little sound, but not scary. Then there was a more easily placed sound, a zipper. What? He thought. And then he realized he was undressing. And for some reason, Beverly was undressing. And the plan works. As soon as Beverly is finished having sex with each of her friends and in the becomes a massive orgy, they immediately remember where they are and how to get out, and they escape. That, to me, and people have been pounding King on that on social media, that, to me, dealing with underage sex in such a blatant, almost positive way is disturbing.
Absolutely. And, you know, I was going to just say one quick thing, too, as you said about the book being 1,000 pages. You know, I know back then The Shining, it, you know, when Stephen King wrote those books, he was definitely dealing with his struggle with alcohol. And a lot of the times he would admit that he was either high or drunk out of his mind, and he would just blab and go on and veer off on these rabbit trails that just kind of made a book very descriptive about things that don't need to be descriptive.
Oh, that was Stan was like that, man. It was all over the place.
It was all over the place. And then you'll see that. And he could definitely could have taken it and made it a 400-page book. Right. And it would have been great, you know, as far as the writing aspect of what he was trying to get out. But he didn't do that. And what I'm getting at this point is this. In the book, if I remember, it's been a long time since I read it, he would go on to so many different descriptions of the kids and what was going on in their lives that you were waiting a long time to see anything or hear anything that had to do with the clown. He'd give you the clown, but then he'd give you 30, 40 pages of all stuff of other things that, you know, right, you don't really care right about being concerned with. So You know, now when the movie comes out, the 1991, you're right. I mean, Corey and what he was trying to do, and I do like the clown as far as whether it was more obtainable for a child to warm up to it because there was that humor in that clown, and I get it. And you see the clown obviously more than you would in the book in the 1990 version. Now fast forward to this version. This version is straight through the whole thing. You see a lot of the clown, and now the clown as I'm watching it, I'm looking at it now in different eyes, and I'm saying, this isn't a clown. This is just a demonic image of a clown, okay, that is constantly there in your face throughout this whole movie. So if they're trying to instill fright in people who probably don't watch horror that much, I definitely believe that you're going to close your eyes and you're going to visualize that clown, you know, at least for probably the first night or two, because it was really there just kind of subliminally getting in your mind with this clown. Then you start to watch what's going on in each individual's lives. You have the girl, Beverly. You can see where they make a little innuendo that her father was sexually abusive to her. So you can kind of see a little bit of it. They don't really show anything, but the way they paint, set the scenes up, you can tell there was something. And then she was just at the point that she didn't want to do that. She confides, she becomes friends with these kids. They kind of bond together. As far as the bullies, that also takes a turnaround too. They got really bullied in the beginning. You can see that they set that up. And then all of a sudden these kids become renegades and they fight back and they're starting to stick up for themselves and avoiding that bully and turning the tables around. Now they all agree that, okay, they've all seen Pennywise. They've all seen this clown. And at the end scene that you know, and of course it knows it's feeding off their fear, as you know, the premise of the whole thing with the demon, it's feeding off of your fear, and it gets them all into the place where it is really like the sewer system. You know, it starts into a house, and the house has the opening goes through, and you can travel, and now you're in this whole sewer system. Beverly ends up getting taken captive by Pennywise, and basically, you know, it's up to these kids to either walk away or fight to get her back. They stand up to the clown. You can tell, obviously, the whole fear thing. They're not afraid of him anymore. He knows that his power is getting less and less. The kids are gaining a little more. Now they bond, they save the girl, and they all get out. So now they leave. So how the scene ends, and like I says, I mean, seeing it, obviously, you're still going to see it. It's not going to take anything from the movie as far as spoilers, because if you know the movie, you pretty well know. And any listening audience is read the book or seen the movie, you kind of know the premise anyway. So at the end of it, they're all, I think they're in the fields and they're talking and they're about to go their own way, you know, as far as their own life. And they make a pact. And the pact is that if this thing comes back in 27 years, we all have to agree that we are going to unite and do battle with this thing again. And they all agreed to it. But what they did differently is that at the end, they cut themselves. You know how kids would do the whole thing, which you cut yourselves and you make a pact, your whole hands and
blood. Right.
Exactly. That's how they did it. They did it with a blood pact. So, the truth of the matter is this. The way they did the movie, they made these kids almost like high school kids, the bullies, the ones being picked on. You have the demon that comes into the play. They find out what's going on. They're getting terrorized by the demon. They form an alliance. They finally figure out what's going on with the demon that is trying to feed off of their fear. They combat the demon. And at the end of the story, they make this pact. we're going to do battle with this again if it should happen in 27 years. So it makes it almost look like you want to cheer for these kids and you're like, yeah, you know, I can't wait to see this, because it takes all the child pornography, and that's what we're going to call it, taking the child pornography scenes and what it was really trying to be captured in the book out. So you scale that down, you take the sting out of that, now you create more intrigue and more compassion for these kids. And not to say that you wouldn't have compassion for kids who were being sexually abused, say, by their parents, and you want to see them turn their life around. I get all that. Those things, you know, are told at times in books and stories and in real life, how they overcome that adversity. So I get all that. But what they're leaving out is the whole sexual thing, because in the movie, there's one boy that likes this girl, Beverly, and she kind of likes him. And then there's another kid, which was the heavier kid, that likes her too, and she likes him as a friend. But they never show that they had any relations at all. They kind of just went their own way. It's almost to say that it's best that we all remain friends. We you know, go our own ways. We stay in contact with each other and make an oath that we're going to come back and we're going to do this battle again. So it's taken all the perversion out, with the exception of the one thing. And that's what we have to really go home in on. Just like The Conjuring did it with the nurse in the second one, creating that demonic figure. Just like Annabelle with the doll creating that demonic figure. Then we have this clown who is a lot more demonic than you know, the Tim Curry's version of it. And you can see that when this sequel comes out, that this demon, it's going to resurrect probably more than likely in a different way. So all these movies, or those three movies that I just named off, all have one thing in common. Once again, to glorify what's happening and to instill you with these new type of characters. It's no more the Jasons and you know, the Freddies and the Michael Myers and the Leatherface, you know, that are the scary things. You know, people have passed all that. They've passed all the zombie thing. You know, that's kind of got shelved. It was scary for the time. It served its purpose, but that's gone. Let's come up with a different type of imagery. Let's pull out the dolls. You know, let's pull out the nun. Let's pull out the demonic figures. Let's pull out the clown, and let's really make them demonic. So they're instilling things into the audience is how they're seeing them, that they can walk away and say, yeah, the movie was okay, or the movie was great, and that's okay. But one thing that everybody will probably take with them is, boy, I saw that clown in my mind the whole night. You know, I can see that thing, you know, and it instills there in your mind. And that's what casts its own fear. So if Hollywood is secretly trying to subliminally put things into people through these images, through the music, through the loudness, through the flavor of what they're doing with the sound and the cinema photography and all those things, they're nailing it like 95%, whatever the message they're trying to convey, they're finally conveying it, and they're doing it with state-of-the-art effects that's now starting to work. It's making an impact, and I can only imagine all these young kids and teenagers that are seeing the movie, or these type of movies that are coming out, you know, 10, 20 years from now, they're going to be able to say, wow, I remember this movie, because that'll still be in their mind. So we're seeing a new wave of a demonic type of energy that's saturating through the movies unlike it's ever been in the past 10, 20 years.
But the one thing in what you were saying that gets lost for me, the original book started out present time and told you what had happened 27 years ago. These were broken, dysfunctional people because of what they experienced,
right,
because of what they went through. It showed that how that experience marked them for life. That's not what this is going to do. Even the fact that she had had, they had had an orgy together to break the spell, the shame that came from it haunted them all those years. So for me, those characters were very sympathetic. Unfortunately, the demon at the end was very unfrightening. They turned it into something else. Even Stephen King said they asked him what he hoped for the reboot. He goes, "I just hope to make the Pennywise scarier at the end." But what you're saying about this character, they've turned him into a hero. They, even though he's a demon, even though he's evil, even though he's been defeated, people are so fascinated. The young actor playing him is now being besieged by female fans, and it's just like the glorification and the magnification of it all is the true story was based on dysfunction, abuse, all those other things, and that is what brought this demon to life. So it's going to be interesting to see where they go with the sequel and how they make that work. But what we're seeing in everything right now, especially this particular Halloween, probably for me more than ever, is they're taking what Hollywood has given, TV has given, and they're turning it into everyday fun experience. Case in point, Universal has something called Halloween Horror Nights. I live through it every year for 22 years here. It's right down the road. I can hear it. This particular year is called the Festival of the Deadliest. And these are the nine, get ready for this, nine haunted houses on the property. One is based on The Shining. The visually intense psychological thriller is now the most terrifying haunted experience imaginable. Oh. Second, Saw, the game of Jigsaw. The traps are set, all that's missing is you. The Jigsaw killer has returned to torment you with his twisted take on poetic justice. Then you have American Horror Story, which for me is one of the most demonic, debased, uncomfortable things I think I've ever seen, and I didn't even make it through season one. American Horror Story Volume 2 experienced three horrifying stories in one disturbing house as a deranged cast of characters seek not only your life, but your soul. Then they have a house called The Horrors of Blumhouse, which is a filmmaking company. And the deranged filmmakers behind Insidious, Sinister, and The Purge comes the horror of the Blumhouse. They all come back to haunt you. Then you have Ash versus the Evil Dead. The Starz original series, Ash versus the Evil Dead, expertly blurs the line between horror and comedy in this horrifically hilarious addition to Halloween Horror Nights. Then you have something new that they've created called Dead Waters. Enter the pestilent swamp that oozes evil, the hellish realm of the voodoo queen. If you fail to escape, you're in for a gut-wrenching experience. Then they have something called The Hive, the crumbling house on 19 Hemingway Lane, a nest of bloodthirsty vampires. If you awaken them, you will face a savage, bestial hunger. They have something called Scarecrow the Reaping, a long-abandoned Depression-era farm. Vengeance takes root, and the only harvest that will be reaped is you. And then my favorite in the list, and I'm being sarcastic, is called The Fallen. You are about to be caught in the crossfire of the eternal war of light versus darkness, and no one will be saved.
Oh. Yeah, you can definitely see that a lot of these theme parks and the things that they're doing. I remember a friend of mine sent me a link last week or the week before. I got to see if I can remember what it was, but I don't know if it's in California, but now they've got the whole prop setting where you can do the tour, and it's like the Exorcist house. So you actually can see, you know, person dressed up to look like, you know, Reagan, and you're in this room, and kind of like how Universal did it with Jaws and stuff back in the day, where you can actually interact and go on the boat and stuff like that. And they're doing it with that. So I can see, once again, that whole theme is they're taking these iconic figures, they're taking them out of the elements of their decades, okay? And they're revamping them and bringing a new fear and intrigue in them, beefing them up and glorifying them now. So it's almost like they're living again through our modern times. So therefore, they're not left alone, you know, 30, 40 years ago, where you can kind of laugh at the effects on certain things. And, you know, how kids today will look at something 30, 40 years ago and they'll laugh at it. They won't even find it funny. But if you can take them out of that element and bring these characters now, same thing with like Jeepers Creepers, that's another thing that has its own air. And maybe this month we'll get to talk about that. And the guy that actually plays the creeper guy there he was actually arrested for something that was kind of like molestation charges, I believe. So, and I'll have to get that article and maybe we can talk about it next week so I can verify that more. But this is what you just said is what's happening. They're leaving out the elements of what it is, and it's dysfunctional people, been bullied, been more of the weaker one. The child pornography, the sex, the rape scenes, and all those little things are somehow getting swept under the rug. But we can't sweep them under the rug because those, and this is where I'm getting at, those are the individuals that a demon would come to aid, so to speak. You're going to go to the dysfunctional one that's getting picked on, the one that's being sexually abused. That energy alone is enough to draw a demon in that situation, almost to kind of, you know, to hey, listen, I can take you away from all. I can fight back for you. I can be that hero for you. And that's what it seems that's happening behind the scenes. Obviously, it's not being told like that in the story, but that's what I'm getting at. People, kids somewhere in their mind and young adults might look and be that one that's getting picked on or been that one that's getting abused. And instead of having a figure like Superman and you know, a superhero coming to your rescue at one time, being that friend that becomes your defense, it's almost like they're turning to the fallen in a very subtle way. And that's where I think the enemy is capitalizing. Hey, I can be your lion. You know, I can be that person for you. Just give me a chance. Just come with me. Just follow me. And that's where I see this going.
When you, first of all, that was how I got into the occult, was coming out of a broken family, being bullied. Feeling bad about myself. But when you take it, it goes one step further. When you look at the list of these horror houses that people are paying a lot of money to go to, families are taking their kids. It's both here and in California. Plus, we have all the haunted houses all across the United States that do something similar. The indoctrination is in overdrive. And that's what we have talked about for 7 years. The indoctrination of the occult through Halloween, fear, and all that other stuff. But when you look at, okay, the one Deadwaters, the Deadwaters of the Voodoo Queen, the horror house is a half-sunken riverboat with the skeletal remains of her victims closing in on you. You got the Hive, which is about the vampires, but these aren't just any kind of vampires. These are the Nosferatu, animalistic, vicious vampires. But then you look at the description of the Fallen. And of course, we have a little pet peeve there with them. In this particular house, the demons and the fallen angels, if that's what they're calling them, are hooked to wires. They're flying, they're jumping, they're crawling up walls. They are, you know, screeching and roaring, and half of it's beautiful, half of it's evil. And for me, beside the fear factor and the imprinting and all the doors that opens, it's an overwhelming desensitization of the senses, of the morality, of your spirituality, and making it real. I mean, seeing it in a movie is one thing, but when it becomes three-dimensional and you can interact with it, it changes it dramatically.
Absolutely. And that's exactly what's happening right now. And, you know, every year we do a Cultoberfest, you know, we'll talk about certain things and then we'll always find a little bit more detail than we did last year. And I think that's what we're going to do this year, at least I'm hoping. And it sounds like that's where we're heading, dissecting the subliminal, subtle things that are happening. And I've got to get the article, and maybe tomorrow, next week, we can talk about a little bit more, especially after you see the movie, that there is a lot of innuendos in that book that is related to the Illuminati. I don't know if you know that, with Stephen King's It and a couple of other Stephen King movies that and books, that there is a subliminal thing that's lined up with the Illuminati and the New World Order. Now, I know, like Beyonce and all this stuff, when we look into the entertainment in that aspect, we can find that. But supposedly somebody has dissected the things that are going on with it and what's happening and the statements and the things that were being made. And I will find that article and we can dissect it a little bit more, all the way down to the ritualistic stuff with the sex scene. So, you know, hopefully we could continue that in a little bit more detail. But I mean, as far as I agree with you, I mean, you know, I know you were bullied. I don't necessarily wasn't really bullied so much, but you know, with my father at that point being a musician and working all the time, he'd work six nights, sometimes seven nights a week. So I never really got to see him. And of course, we cling to other things for that authoritative, that father type figure. And I think that is easy for people like ourselves or any child at that age to be influenced by, you know what, everybody's talking about their dads and not being around. I mean, their dad's being around, my dad's not being around. So you find other key figures that becomes that dad type of thing. And unfortunately for me, it was always that, you know, going to school and Catholic school and seeing all the statues and all those things that were going on. I would look at the crucifix and I would look at Jesus and I would always be, you know, it was to me at that point, you know, 5, 6 years old, it was a dead man on a cross. Where is that power in there? And then I started to understand a little bit more about the devil and all the forces of darkness. And I'm like, well, why am I going to be on the losing team? So I can see how we could all look to the darkness to be our friends. But what we did, at least I didn't think of then, is, okay, what if that was the case? What if you do have these beings that you look up to or the ones that you think are going to protect you? Do you really think they're going to protect you for absolutely nothing? Now, as a boy or as a child, you can't think beyond having that someone or something to look up to, that figure. But you have to figure that everything has to come with a price. It's just a matter of how and when that's going to happen.
Yeah, my deception was a little different. Being sickly, being bullied, my father walked out when I was six. I was looking for the godly power. I was looking for that power against evil, even though I was trying to harness the supernatural abilities that were latent inside of me. But I always looked at it, I always saw good and evil distinctly. I always wanted to play on the winning side. The problem was I'd been seduced and I was playing on the wrong side without knowing it. And I think that's what Hollywood does. I think there are going to be some people that are just going to get into the darkness, the occult, the magic, all that other stuff. But I think the majority of people, and this is just an assumption on my part, I think the majority of people want to be good. And they want to do good. And they would rather be on the light side than the dark side. Nobody's ever explained to them the truth about it all. But when you look at Halloween, you look at Hollywood. Do you know during Halloween will generate more revenue in 60 days? And that's September and October because they start early. They'll generate more revenue in 60 days than Hollywood will in the whole year prior from January to October. That's pretty crazy that this Festival of Fear, and of course, we'll talk about that at the end of the month, what it's really all based on. But the candy, the costumes, the parties, the haunted houses, the theme parks, the movies, $1 billion, billions of dollars. Fear sells, thrillers and horrors make a lot of money, but it still comes down to the fact that it's all about fear. And even though in the movie, yes, the kids win, but do they really win? He's going to come back in 27 years. They didn't really win. They just delayed the inevitable, like The Exorcist. They didn't really win. Two priests died. The little girl's life is ruined. Her mother's career is over. All of the ripple effect that Hollywood likes to show is that in the long run, evil really does win. That's just my take. Did I lose you? Joe has disappeared into the ether. Joe, don't go down the hole. Don't go into the sewer. Don't chase him. Don't chase it. Leave him alone. You don't want that red balloon.
Can you hear me now? I'm over here trying to find the unmute button, and I have to get out of the app to come in to unmute it. But what you were saying is it's true. I mean, we've talked about The Exorcist, and I'll always talk about that because, and speaking of The Exorcist, I believe season two of the series of The Exorcist just kicked off this past Friday. So.
Which is amazing because the first couple of shows I watched of the first season were awful.
I apparently, according to the reviews, it started to kick off toward the middle to the end of the first season, enough to give it a shot into the second season. I don't know if it's going to make a full second season, but I don't think it will exceed over this second
Hey,
season anyway.
Lucifer's still on the air. Give me a break.
Yeah, that's true. That's another thing. And once again, though, and the reason why, and I'm going to tell you the reason, well, you already know the reason why. You're putting these actors, male and female, good-looking characters. One of them, I believe, was the principal in season six or season seven of Buffy the Vampire Slayer. He plays one of the demons. He plays the brother of Lucifer, I believe. Then you had the girl that was in
Yeah,
Battlestar
she plays God's wife.
Galactica. Yes, I mean, so what I think is happening, it's a different twist. So therefore, they're going to probably grow with that a little bit until that gets oversaturated. As far as American Horror Story, because I do agree with you, I always liked a good horror movie, growing up as a kid and a teenager, only because of the fact is, scary movies, you go on dates, you do all those things, the Freddies, the
Wait, you do
Jasons.
what things on dates? What are you
You
talking about?
go to well, you go to
What are you
listen.
talking about?
You always wanted to take a girl on a date, say like to see a Freddy or a Jason, all that stuff, because you knew it was fake stuff, and it's just a bunch of scare stuff. Back then, I think the scary movies, the horrors, the stuff like that was a little bit different. But now it is elevated so much that you can't go to the movies and see a horror movie for fun. At least I can't look at the horror movies the same way as a fun thing. And I don't know how the younger generation does or the teenagers. Maybe they do it for the same reason. But what I'm saying is, 80%, you're never left with an image that kind of embeds in your mind, unless you're looking at an Exorcist, unless you're looking at, the Omen and this stuff like when we were younger, that was more demonic. Everything else was kind of just ha ha stuff, The same thing with the Friday the 13th. But now I think it's a whole different thing. I think it's these characters have become so demonically enhanced that I don't even want to say it, but it's almost like the demonic realm is building superheroes. If that makes any sense
to
you.
Without a doubt.
They're building these type of superheroes, and every so often you will get that real demonic air in a show or a movie. And I think American Horror Story is that. You've seen some of the twisted and bizarre stuff in season one. Then they try to follow the theme with doing like the insane asylum. Then they did the Coven of Witches, you know, and then they did the one with the carnival. And then I think they did the one that had in the apartment there with the hotel. And then right. From the hotel.
But the visuals, yeah, I haven't watched it. I just saw the clip. The visuals became more perverse and more debauched. Exactly. And just really nasty stuff.
That's what it is. And here's where it is. It's all that, necrophilia stuff? That's the perversion that is always linking the sex with the diabolical demonic stuff. There's a lot of the twisted perversion, and then you're bringing the homosexuality in with it now. So, you know, it's changed. The dynamics have changed to the regular cheesy slasher movie with the guy and the girl in the lake, and then the axe murderer comes, and you don't really see it. You just kind of guess what's going on. Now they've taken it such a step further that they're intertwining perversion, child pornography, homosexuality, and they're hiding that under the carpets in these real special effects movies that are making these iconic characters, these demonic figures, look like superheroes. And it's just heading, it's bringing us one step closer to the Fallen's return. And I think it's another way to induct them, another way to introduce them, to soften the blow when they do come.
There's no doubt the indoctrination into the days of Noah has been going on for a while. You know, you used to think that there used to be a marketing expression that sex sells, and they've proven that it doesn't. Sex will get people's attention, but it won't force them to buy anything. But what does force people to lay out money is fear. And when you tie the two of them together, the salaciousness, the visuals, and then you keep pushing the boundaries and pushing the boundaries, and traditional television won't let you do it, but syndicated will, and then HBO, Showtime, Stars will let you do whatever you want. It just keeps going and going and going, and kids have access to it all. Very few parents, I'm just going to be honest here, very few parents keep their kids from seeing that stuff. I know some do, but it's very few. And these kids have their minds filled, their spirits and their souls filled. And this is what this month becomes all about, which is why we do this, is we talk about different things. We bring things to the forefront to get you to look at them. Maybe you don't agree with everything we say. Maybe we can force you to go do your own homework and do your own research. But the fact is, if we looked at this as a war, we're losing. Those who believe in God, believe in Jesus of Nazareth, those who are parents, those who have a moral mindset, we're losing. We're losing the battle. And we can't give up, but we need to acknowledge and recognize, A, that we're in a battle, and B, we're on the wrong side of it. And hopefully over this next month, we'll give you an ammunition to help fight that battle. Closing thoughts, brother.
Well, first of all, here's my closing thought. We started the show slow. We didn't even know what date it was. Didn't know how to expect it. I think it turned out to be a really good show, and we got to hammer down on a lot of stuff internally that's what's happening with these movies and the messages that we're feeling and we're hearing. I think taking a movie like It, with its popularity right now, and dissecting that, definitely framed the work for us to kick us off as we go through Occultoberfest. You know, and obviously if you see it before next Sunday, we can definitely elaborate even a little bit more about it. I'd like to get the articles and put it together, how the Illuminati is tied into that in symbolism, and then we can take it from there. But I think for the first show, it was really educational. I liked where it was going. I liked the way we've been able to kind of paint that picture perfectly. And also to speak on one last thing quickly, how the demonic does work through, how the fallen does work through even writers, through their imaginations. You can take a talented person like Stephen King. If you put all the weirdness aside, I mean, he's not the greatest writer, but he knew how to get in your mind. And if you can be influenced with that type of demonic enhancement or that bullying or whatever he was feeling, to get that out on paper is definitely a good ingredient to create a demonic atmosphere, one that penetrates millions of people who read his books, you know, throughout the world. So the demonic will hit us through visual, through movies, and through reading.
Amen. That's a good way to close it out. You're right. It's October 1st. We figured it out. Soft opening. We started out soft. We finished better. And who knows where it's going to go. I think we have four more Sundays. Let me check. Four more Sundays. Yes, in October. So who knows where it's going to go. We're going to keep shining the light. We're going to keep doing this. And hopefully you will, A, enjoy it, B, get something from it. Any ideas, any suggestions, any topics, supernaturalresponse.net, firefalltalkradio.com. Good show. Appreciate it. Appreciate you being here, our listeners. We appreciate each and every one of you. Remember, you can share these shows. You can share the links. You can download them. We don't do a whole lot of promotion, but I think Occultoberfest is one of those things. You should take that picture that's on Facebook. I will also put it on the SRT website and tell people, hey, you need to check this out. 7 p.m. Sunday night, Firefall Talk Radio. Reflections in the Dark. I'm Richard Grant on behalf of Joseph Drone. We're going to keep shining the light, folks. We're going to go into the darkness, and who knows, maybe some of you are going to want to come with us.
Boo.